Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Studio is mobile today in Lincoln, Nebraska, where tonight the Nittany Lions will take on Nebraska. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You want to deal with the best? Sunbury Motors falls into that category. You're dealing with the best. Sales, service, leadership, getting you the best deal, fitting your budget, all Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. A great Thursday afternoon to you. Ran into Scott Frost. He asked me, he says, is the suit with you? And I said no. Should have seen the look on his face, Sean. I mean, he looked relieved.
Yeah.
So, no. All right, so let's get into it. There are several things we're going to get into today. One is I'm going to talk, obviously, about the basketball team. We'll get into that in just a moment. But I also want to get into this idea, and Nancy Armour is one of many, by the way. But Nancy Armour in USA Today is one of many that has been writing about Trevor Lawrence now being the poster child of those who would argue that student athletes should be paid. And I want to get into that because Lawrence is in a position. Look, Lawrence had his finest senior year. You know, a freshman year. Lawrence had a freshman year that certainly is comparable to the freshman years of a Peyton Manning and an Andrew Luck. The question is, will he continue to progress? Will he stay away from injuries? When he fights his first slump, will he battle his way out of it? I mean, they're all questions, but still, on this particular day, and between now and the first game of the next season, in which there is no pressure whatsoever on him to win or lose a game, he is going to be a star. All right? For the next, you know, that's just the way it is, because he's not going to be missing games, losing games, anything like that. Nothing's going to happen in that regard. So he is going to be that poster child, no question. So we're going to talk about that as well coming up. Because it is easy to sit there and say a student-athlete should be paid. It's another one to come up with solutions. And remember, each time there is a solution, there's always going to be unintended consequences with a solution. And that also has to be discussed. It also has to be something that does come into play. So, Sean, great to have you with us on the show today, as always.
Thank you, kind sir. We got a blustery, windy day here across the valley, but we're getting into mid-January. It's part of the deal, too, as we're getting into the mid-portion of the hoop schedule as well.
Well, it also means that the trip back tonight is going to be faster. I saw at one point the winds aloft were 92 miles per hour. So, we kind of, to be honest with you, I fought that coming out, but the trip out seemed like nothing, and part of it was I was engrossed in a book. I was reading Vern Lundquist's autobiography, and I'm over 100 pages into it now. It's fascinating in reading about Uncle Vern's life, his career, and so forth. And, you know, the ups and downs that anybody has along the way. I mean, you may be Uncle Vern at the end, but how did you get to be Uncle Vern? Okay? And there were certainly ups and downs that went with it. And so I read the book, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm a little more than halfway done reading it. But the trip back with those 92-mile-per-hour winds, instead of taking, I don't know, 220 or whatever it is to get out of here. It may take like an hour 40 to come back tonight. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. The basketball team will play Nebraska tonight. One thing you'll notice right away, the Nebraska starting five is outstanding. Their bench, no. In fact, we're going to be talking with Chris Basnett from the Lincoln Star Journal on the show today. And I'll get into that with him about their bench being eh. Okay, because that is a weakness on their team. They're not the greatest defensive team going, but they but they're an older team. And that's where it comes in for Penn State. There are two critical numbers for Penn State right now, Sean. And it's not the 7-8. It's not the record on the road or anything like that. The critical numbers for Penn State are 8 and 307. So what are those two numbers? 8 happens to be the strength of schedule that Penn State's playing right now, according to the KenPom rankings. Now, if you take the ESPN BPI, they see it's 5. So the strength of schedule is outstanding. And the last I checked, Michigan State's next at home on Sunday, and then Iowa is in the Jordan Center on Wednesday night, and then it's at Minnesota. So I don't see the strength of schedule changing here anytime soon. So what's the 307? So the 8 is the strength of schedule. We'll use the KenPom number. The 307 is Penn State's age compared to the other 353 teams. That's where they are in terms of experience. 307 out of 353. This runs counter to what I've been talking about with the program, that you need to be, Penn State consistently needs to be an older team. They need to be an older program. And they were on the path to doing that, as I pointed out before. When, you know, Shep Garner, of course, was a senior, had to go. Julian Moore, critical post presence off the bench, was an older player that you could turn to and lean on. Fifth-year player had to go. That's natural. That's how it plays out. For Nebraska, Copeland and Palmer and Watson are all leaving after this year. Okay, you're saying, well, how'd they get a Palmer, Copeland, and Watson? Well, they recruited Watson. Copeland transferred from Georgetown and Palmer from Miami. But Penn State was on that path to being older, and it's interesting with Pat Chambers. Very rarely have they been an older team. But Lamar Stevens certainly is older. Mike Watkins is older. Josh Reeves is older. I mean, Reeves is a senior. And he and Watkins, by the way, came in together, so Watkins is a fourth-year player. But in an area in the backcourt, this is where, for example, and I would be saying this whether it had been Stevens or Reeves. Say Stevens had left early and Carr had stayed, or Reeves had left early and Carr had stayed. I'd be having the same conversation about the age of the basketball team. What it's done now is it has thrown so much more responsibility onto younger players in what they're doing at both ends of the floor. Rashear Bolden is not a great defender, but he can be a really good offensive player. Miles Dredd, to his credit, can be both, and so can Myron Jones. And they've got to be able, if everything had stuck to the plan, and again, it's a blessing and a curse that Tony Carr goes early to the NBA draft. The blessing is it shows that Penn State can get somebody drafted in the NBA and be an early entry and be drafted. Blessing. Helps them recruiting. Shows that Penn State's a pathway to the NBA just like it was for Tim Frazier. All right? That's important with people in recruiting. The curse is that you go back to being younger again when you're on the path to being an older team. Carr's presence would have taken the pressure off of Bolton, Dredd, and Jones, where you're now, as I mentioned yesterday, weaning yourself into the lineup. And now they've had the pressure thrown on them. Bolton is a very good offensive player. He's an okay defender, but he's also not strong enough with the ball. So you can't really throw point guard responsibilities on him at this stage. He's not strong enough with the ball, and I don't know if he's physically strong enough yet. I think he needs a year in the weight room. Dredd's not a point guard. Now, he is strong with the ball. He is physically ready to play in the Big Ten. And then there's Myron Jones. Something that Penn State, and then there's the Mike Watkins situation. The Watkins situation is interesting because I think you see some of the great things that Watkins can still do. Can still run the floor. Can still dunk. He can still block shots. He can do all those things. Here's two areas where Watkins, after being out 9 months, is not back yet. One is he is to his credit, trying to make the unselfish play. In other words, I'm trying to kick the ball out of the post. But his judgment in terms of passing the ball through traffic, he's not as sharp, not as crisp doing that, and it's led to live ball turnovers. So he's got to have better judgment with that, and he's got to be stronger and have a better sense for it. The other part is this. I'm not going to get into what Mike Watkins' injury was and how it happened, and because it is one of the more unusual things I've ever heard of in my life, okay? And he was out 9 months. Mike Watkins makes the initial play, and he is the old Mike Watkins when he does it. But he still, but initial plays don't always do it in basketball. There are some times that you've got to make a second and a third play within it. And when he gets to the second and third play within that same sequence, Mike doesn't quite yet have the same jump on those second and thirds that he does on his first because of how unusual his injury was. That part really helped him the last year and a half when he played. And that part isn't quite back yet because physically it's still not quite there yet. It's just the way it is. And if you knew, and look, I'm not at liberty to talk about what he did with his leg, his knee, okay? But believe me, if you knew, you'd be like, yo. And then there's Josh Reeves. Josh Reeves is an outstanding defender and a good three-point shooter, right? And he's a really good facilitator when he is the second facilitator out there. He's had to take on the responsibility of being the primary facilitator where there is a balance between shooting it, getting your own, and getting everybody else theirs. Josh really is still trying very hard to make sure everybody else, quote, gets theirs. And in that sense, he should be the second primary scorer on this team. But he's not taking a lot of shots. He only took, like, what, 3-4 shots the other day. And that's the same thing in the Michigan game. He didn't take a lot of shots. So he still hasn't found that balance between I'm getting mine and you're getting yours. Josh Reeves made Tony Carr better. Tony Carr made Josh Reeves better. Well, now Josh Reeves has to live without Tony Carr. It's the way it is. And he's got to find that balance in the offense of playing that way while still being a really great defender, which he is, and staying out of foul trouble. I'm going to talk about the three-point game in a moment as we continue from Lincoln on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Like Jared Parker is going to be the new assistant coach for wide receivers at Penn State. On the Duke staff this past year as the wide receivers coach and an offensive assistant the year before that. You may recognize the name because he was the interim head coach at Purdue when Penn State played them in 2016 and had been on that staff for a while, but it looks like he is the one that's going to be getting the spot for Penn State as the new wide receiver coach for the Nittany Lions, Jared Parker. Quick note, we'll talk, we'll get into that a little bit, because guess who put his name into the transfer base today? Do you see that one, Sean?
Yes, an Ohio State quarterback.
Tate Martell.
Yeah.
A lot of bold words when Fields joined, and now it's like, I think I'll leave. Okay. I mean, you know, it's always bold words when the next one is adios. He put his name in there. Josh Gattis is now the new offensive coordinator at Maryland with Mike Locksley, Penn State's former wide receivers coach.
Actually, I just found this on social media, and this is according to Bruce Feldman, who's been on the show before, Fox Sports and The Athletic. He is now reporting that Josh Gattis is going to be the new offensive coordinator at Michigan.
Oh, really?
And that was just posted by Bruce about 5 minutes ago. Michigan. So I know you have access to The Athletic and Bruce's story, so we want to check that out there. It's breaking as we speak.
All right, so that's interesting.
I heard the Maryland. I heard the Josh to Maryland a couple of hours ago. I thought that was.
All right. So, interesting. Okay. Now the 3-point stuff. I want to get into that. Then we'll get back into football, and we'll hear from Chris Basnett in the next half hour. That sound right? Chris is going to be on.
Yep. We got him. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
All good.
The 3-point shooting. For Penn State, okay, I always love when I hear, they're taking too many 3-point shots. Okay, it's not 1975. Slow down. Okay, the game has changed. Now, like anything, can you take too many? Yes, you can take too many 3-point shots. There's no getting around it. Okay? But in today's game, and especially with Penn State, they've got to be able to hit 7 to 10 threes a game. So to me, minimum 7. Now, Patrick was telling me today his minimum was 6. Well, I'm one beyond him, okay? I'm saying they have to hit 7 to 10 during the course of a game. It makes all the difference in the world. Penn State's only hit 6 total in the last 2 games. Now you look at the shooting percentage of practice, and look, the shooting percentage of practice, Penn State practices hard. They practice hard. I mean, so there are times where they're not calling fouls in practice because they want you to get used to accepting contact and there are fouls, which is typical. Everybody does that. But in this week in practice, Lamar Stevens is at 50%. Okay? Rozier Bolden's at 45%. Miles Dredd and Myron Jones have each hit 42% of their threes in practice this week, and Josh Reeves is at 37. Now, that's practice. It doesn't count. But practice is tough, the whole deal, and it shows you what they're capable of. Just relax, go out, and fire away. Right? Fire away. And that's what they need to do, because in this system, you're not going to get yanked for a shot. In this system, you will get yanked for making a bad defensive play. Okay? So they need to hit, to me, 7 to 10 threes in a game that puts them right in the thick of it. And to me, that is the area that has got to change for them. They've got to get to the point where they have a level of consistency hitting 3-point shots. They've got to hit 7 to 10 today, 7 to 10 Sunday, and 7 to 10 next Wednesday. It's just the way it is. That's the way it's going to be all the way through.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by the great people at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great staff, great product, great sales, great service, and they get you the best deal possible. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Tonight, Penn State plays Nebraska in basketball. We're going to touch on both basketball and football. Chris Basnett is the beat writer for the Lincoln Star Journal that covers Nebraska basketball and football. Chris, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
This starting five for Nebraska, how cohesive have they been?
Pretty good. pretty good. I think before the season, most people would have said it's one of the better starting fives in the Big Ten, and I think they've lived up to that so far. You know, there was a little bit of concern maybe among the fan base, at least, of some of these guys after they kind of tested the professional waters last year. You know, would they kind of start hunting their own shots and playing their own game? And it really hasn't been that way. It's a group that really gets along well. It's a really good locker room. It's a bunch of pieces that really fit together. You know, you've got a veteran point guard in Glenn Watson. You've got obviously a big time scorer in James Palmer Jr. And then the other pieces around them. Isaac Copeland's an excellent forward. You know, Isaiah Roby's got maybe the most talent on the team, is going to start to come into his stride the last couple of weeks. So it's a group that really, for all their different skill sets, they really seem to fit well together.
I want to get to Glenn Watson, because it's one thing in my computer, for example, the numbers from last season are still in there. So the last time Penn State played, which was late in the season here, Watson was not shooting the ball well, wasn't shooting the ball well from three, wasn't shooting the ball well from two. His numbers are dramatically up this year. What has that meant to their offense, that it's not just him as a distributor, but his personal numbers are up?
You could really make the argument that as Glenn Watson goes, this team goes. When he's really good, Nebraska is really good. And when he struggles, the team struggles. We've seen that in the last two losses. Glenn hasn't played very well the last two games, and Nebraska has a couple losses. So, yeah, the fact that he can score now and shoot it so much better, especially shoot it so much better from outside, from two-point range, it just opens everything up that much more for a guy like James Palmer, who likes to take defenders off the dribble and get the ball in. For a guy like Isaac Copeland, who kind of likes that mid-range game and taking a step or two in from the three-point line. So, yeah, when he's going good, it makes this offense so, so much better. And you can see that in the team wide stats. They're scoring as many points as they have, as the Nebraska team has, and gosh, almost 20 years. So if Glenn's good, then this team is generally pretty good.
As Penn State fans know from watching the Tony Carr saga last year, that the draft boards can change, where suddenly maybe you're ranked 30th and maybe the next draft board you're 42, whatever. Isaiah Roby is on the initial draft board right now. What makes him a potential NBA player in your mind, Chris?
It's a couple different things. One, it's his measurables. You're talking about a guy that's 6'8", 230 pounds, can handle the ball, has range out to the three-point. He has all the physical tools, and it's for Isaiah, it's just been a matter of can you put him together or not. The potential really is what gets the attention, I think, of NBA drafts and of fans of the team, because you see it in flashes. You can see him just make dominant plays and make plays physically that other guys just can't make. And I think that's a big part of it. You know, he kind of fits the mold of the kind of modern NBA, where he's kind of that positionless player that can do a little bit of everything and can dribble, can shoot. And, of course, for Nebraska, he's their five man. He's the post man. He plays inside most of the game. So, you know, he can just do a little bit of everything, and he has such a tantalizing skill set. I think that's what makes him really attractive to professional scouts.
Yeah, he's got that NBA length you need. He's got long arms. I mean, you know, not only can he move, and he can finish, and he can shoot, I think his length is a big plus for him. Would you agree with that, Chris?
Yeah. He's 6'8", and he's got, I think, a 7'2" wingspan.
Yeah.
He makes him so much better defensively. And the game that really comes to mind is when they played Michigan here last year, and he guarded Mo Wagner most of the game. And Mo Wagner went 0-for-5 from the field and scored 2 points. You know, and Mo Wagner didn't do that a whole lot last year. And that is a lot because of what Isaiah Roby was able to do to him defensively. It allows Nebraska to switch a lot of stuff when you're talking screens, pick and roll, that sort of thing. It makes their defense a lot more versatile. And, yeah, his length, whether it's in the man-to-man or in the middle of their zone, it just makes a huge difference for Nebraska defensively.
With all due respect to Nebraska, there's no natural recruiting area for Nebraska. Copeland's a transfer from Georgetown. Palmer's a transfer from Miami. There's another transfer sitting out this particular year. It's not unusual. What have transfers meant to this program, Chris, and how have they been able to attract transfers to this program?
You could make your argument that's the reason Nebraska's kind of become more relevant on the national scene in basketball. You mentioned the guys that are on this team this year. You can go back to a guy like Teran Pettaway, who came in here and led him to the NCAA tournament in Tim Miles' second year. He was a transfer from Texas Tech. Andrew White transferred in from Kansas and averaged 19 points a game. You know, it's a deal where I think guys, once they've kind of been in college for a season or two seasons and they kind of want to explore, they see the facilities Nebraska has. I think that's a big part of it. I think Tim Miles is really good about laying out a plan of, okay, here's what we can do to make you better, and here's what we can do to make you a focal point in our system. And what we've seen from these transfers is that they do become focal points in Nebraska system. They're not having guys come in just, you know, come off the bench and play 10 or 15 minutes a game. They're coming in because they can be difference makers for this team on both ends of the court. And I think, you know, that now Nebraska's got a reputation. They can develop these guys, and people and players around the country see that. And I think it's just kind of built upon itself over the last 7 years that Tim Miles has been here, that they can bring transfers in and turn them into really good players.
The vast majority of the bench points have been against in games in which Nebraska has been the prohibitive favorite. How much of a concern in a big game is Nebraska's bench?
It's pretty big. It's pretty big. We knew before the season depth was going to be an issue for this team. They have some guys they like, but they just don't have any experience. You know, you're talking about a true sophomore, Nana Kenton, who's probably your number one guy off the bench. Your number two big man off the bench is a 6'8" kid from Nebraska who was a walk-on up until last December and just earned a scholarship last December.
Tanner
Borkhardt. Yeah. Brady Hyman is a true freshman, 6'11", and they really like his skill set, but, you know, obviously just hasn't played much at the college level. So he has good nights and he has his bad nights. And then they really like Amir Harris, the point guard. They like his athleticism, sure, but he's at mono and hasn't played the last month. So, you know, it's been a deal where they like the pieces they have, but those pieces just don't have any experience. So, yeah, when it gets into the grind of the Big Ten season, when we've already started to see that a little bit the last couple games, there's just not a lot past that starting five. And it's certainly going to be a concern going forward if those guys aren't able to kind of make a step up in competition.
Which then is a domino. If you've got guys playing 35 minutes a night because they have to, how much of a concern is there? You know, I know they're older. They're older, so you know they're better conditioned. They've been through the weight program. That's important. But is there a concern of a wear-down factor because of minutes played?
I think so. You look at James Palmer Jr. right now, I think he leads the Big Ten in minutes played. He's playing about 37 minutes a game for four games. And that's the guy you're counting on. He'll get you 20 points a night. That only gets harder as the year goes on. The scouts get a little better, the more tired, don't recover quite as quickly. You know, we saw something a little bit similar a couple of years ago with Nebraska's point guard Ty Webster, who was playing about 36, 37 minutes a night.
Right.
He just wore down at the end of the year. You know, he was their leading scorer, and you could just see his jump shot left, and he wasn't quite as explosive. So, yeah, it's a big concern because obviously you love the talent of that starting five, and they're really skilled guys, but if they're not able to recover like they did at the beginning of the year, then, yeah, like you said, it becomes a domino effect, and you really do start worrying about what guys wearing down. So I don't know that it's a concern right now, but certainly it's something to keep an eye on as the season goes on.
And Nebraska may be 1-3 in the conference, but those three are the road games. They're coming off back-to-back road games with Iowa and Maryland. What is it? Why has this area, you know, we know this area supports football. I mean, it's an automatic. When's the last game that wasn't sold out? 1962, I think, something like that for football.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. Now, and it's ridiculous, by the way, Penn State hasn't played here since 2012. I think that's absurd. That's a different commentary, but the Big Ten's got to be aware of such things. We'll get to that a little bit later. But what is it about this area that has captivated about basketball, because it wasn't an automatic sellout 5-6 years ago until they built Pinnacle Bank?
Yeah, no, it's you hit the nail on the head. A lot of it's Pinnacle Bank Arena, and it's obviously become one of the nicer facilities, not only Big Ten but in the nation. It's really fan friendly. It's obviously in a kind of revitalized downtown area around a bunch of restaurants and bars. So it's been pretty good, but you know, the last couple of years,
yeah.
And they've been really good at home. They, you know, you're talking about a 19 game home winning streak right now, and you know, I can think back to Christmas break here. They were playing a Division II team, Southwest Minnesota State, and they had 13,000 people in the stands. And you just kind of look around and you shake your head and go, "Don't your people have anything better to do?" But that just speaks to the support of this program, and it's not only football and it's not only basketball. The volleyball team sold out a couple hundred mats in a row. You know, the
sure.
fans here, you know, just love the university and love their sports, and with no professional team to really kind of split allegiances, it's just kind of the big fill in town. And so when a team's going good and they're playing in a really good arena, you're going to have a lot of really good crowds, and that's what we've seen so far this year.
Nebraska's done a very good job under Tim Miles, and part of this is the transfer thing. All right, so I mean, I want to make sure everyone understands part of it is the transfer thing. But Nebraska's done a pretty good job in the last 5 years of consistently being one of the older teams. I think that's fair, right, Chris, in terms of the starting line?
Yep.
Penn State has not been able to be consistently the older team. When you look at Penn State right now, which had been on that track to it, and then Carr, blessing and a curse, blessing it's good for the program, he goes to the NBA, curses that he went to the NBA. or to the draft. I mean, obviously he's playing Italy right now. How do you view Penn State right now?
They're an interesting team. I think it's a team that's going to fight you. Pat Chambers always has teams that are going to make it tough on an opponent. They've obviously got a couple guys that have been through the ringer. You know, guys like Lamar Stevens and that have been through the battles, that understand it. But, you know, it's a guards game anymore. And when you look at Penn State, you look at their guard position, it's a couple pretty young guys, a couple freshmen. And, you know, I think that's an area where Nebraska has an advantage tonight, or should have an advantage, I think. Right. You know, we mentioned Glenn Watson and a couple of the other guys. So, yeah, it's a team that's kind of clearly kind of going through the growing pains of having to replace some really good players. You mentioned Tony Carr, Shep Garner, obviously. So that you can see that the pieces are kind of there. But like you said, you want to be old. Tim Miles has a saying, you want to get old and you want to stay old in college basketball. And like you said, they've been able to do that. And so, and you see why. When you're not old, you have that transition. You have that learning period. I think that's what Penn State's going through right now. And that's a team that, if that core stays together, can be really dangerous down the road. But you've kind of got to go through the battles first and learn what it takes.
Chris, I want to ask you a quick football question. Scott Frost has now gone through one season here. They started out 0-6. What did you see over the final six that maybe gives everyone around here a thought of, hey, you know what? We're on the road back.
I think you saw the players start to kind of believe in the system and kind of trust the process, to steal a phrase, you know, that was kind of the thing all year, was it's going to be process, build the culture. You know, it's those things that maybe aren't tangible, that fans can't see, that needed to be fixed here. There's always been some talent, and obviously we saw that with a guy like Adrian Martinez and Devine Ojukwu and Stanley Morgan Jr. You know, there's some pretty good pieces there, but what needed to be fixed was the culture. It wasn't good under Mike Riley. You know, the weight program had fallen off, the players being responsible for themselves had fallen off. So once that got fixed, that's when this team really started playing a lot better. And we kind of all saw it coming. We knew when that first win came, there was going to be a bunch more coming, because it was just a matter of getting that win and getting that belief in what Scott Frost was going to do. And even the two losses at Ohio State, at Iowa, that, you know, their one possession games came right down to the end. So this team really believes in their head coach. They believe in the culture. They've seen what can happen now when you do put the work in and believe in it. So I think that's the biggest part of it. Yes, you've got some great playmakers and some great playmakers coming in this recruiting class, but it has started with the players kind of believing in the culture and believing in the process.
And it also doesn't hurt that he was able to lock into the right quarterback early. I know he got hurt in the Colorado game, but what did you see in the growth of Adrian Martinez that tells everybody that one of the biggest decisions that they made was recruiting a kid like him?
Yeah, you can tell he's special. You just know when some players have it, and he has it. You know, he came in here as a true freshman, and when you talk to him, it sounded like you were talking to a 45-year-old man. You know, he's grown up. He understands the game. Obviously, the physical skills are spectacular. He can do a little bit of everything, running, throwing, whatever you want him to do. But from the maturity of a kid like that, and you know, kind of like basketball is a point guard game, football is a quarterback game. And if you've a really good one, and Penn State's seen this the last few years as well, if you've got a really good one, you've got a chance to be really good. And Nebraska's got a pretty good one, named a freshman All-American, along with some guy who just quarterbacked Clemson to a national title. So he's held in pretty high regard nationally. So, yeah, the fact that they were able to go in and flip him from Tennessee and do it not long after they got hired here, I think that was such an important part of what this coaching staff wanted to get accomplished. And now that he's here, you see why they wanted him so badly.
Chris, absolute pleasure as always. Thanks so much. I look forward to seeing you tonight.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
Chris Basnett joining us from the Lincoln Star Journal. We'll come back with more in a moment from Lincoln on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, great to have you with us. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk about, in part, about the theory about paying athletes. It is something that Nancy Armour, for example, and this is not, I mean, it's just her article is typical. It's not atypical. That there's been more written about paying athletes on the college level than ever before. She has anointed Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback at Clemson, who cannot go to the NFL draft until 2021 under the NFL's collective bargaining agreement. That's the earliest he could enter the NFL draft is 2021. Well, Trevor Lawrence obviously has put together an outstanding freshman season. He has led his team to a national championship. He was the MVP of the college football playoff championship game. And it has all the attributes, at least initially, that you would like to see in a quarterback. He certainly had the kind of freshman season that would be on par with an Andrew Luck, on par with the freshman season. I'm talking about freshman seasons now. Andrew Luck's freshman season at Stanford, Peyton Manning's freshman season at Tennessee. They were able to continue on that path and then turn that into gold in their NFL careers. Now, can he avoid getting hurt? Can he avoid a slump? If he does get into a slump, can he fight his way out of it? I mean, there'll be a lot of factors that happen along the way. But as she points out, he is the poster child of a student athlete that is at the moment great, that draws a lot of attention, that certainly would sell a lot of tickets, and thus people would say, well, why is Dabo Swinney getting bonus, and he's getting a scholarship? So we're going to talk about that in the next half hour. I think it'd be an important topic to talk about, and I'm looking forward to it, to talking about it, because there's going to be any time you come up with solutions or proposals for solutions, you always have to realize and examine all of it, because there are going to be unintended consequences. They're talking about expansion of the college football playoff as a possibility. They say, quote, everything's on the table, and conferences are going to plan to discuss the topic of playoff expansion. Doesn't mean there's not unintended consequences with an expansion. It's not as simple as everything is made out to be. And I think that that's something that is... anytime you come up with something, there's unintended consequences. Now, moving Sean in, there was no unintended consequences. It's just been a win-win all the way through. Although, you know, those who are involved, you know, like Jamie, for example, I mean, they've got the suit now. They're like unintended consequences every day. Sean, stop laughing.
No, it's true. Yeah. It's true.
No. Every day. Unintended consequences. So, when's the next Shikalimi game?
It'll be tomorrow night for basketball. Tonight we've got wrestling. Right. Road trip for the Braves tonight. They're heading up to Central Mountain tonight. And Steve will be on with that at 7. And once that's done, we'll go to you and DJ out there in Lincoln.
Yes. So we're looking forward to that tonight at Pinnacle Bank Arena. I'll say this about Pinnacle Bank Arena. They've had the same sponsor the entire time, so it hasn't been like the arena in Philadelphia where it's the Bank of the Month Club. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.